Welcome, welcome everyone to season 10 of the Yoga Therapy Hour. For the most part this season, we are going to be talking about the eight limbs of yoga and how to have a rearrangement of the inner architecture of your mind, your body, and your nervous system. Now, there will be a couple of special guests to break it up a little bit in case this isn't your thing. You'll still have a few opportunities to learn and grow with random people that don't have to do with the eight limbs. But for the most part, we're going to spend the entire season working on the inner transformation that's available to us from the teachings of yoga and yoga therapy. Now let's begin with talking about what does it mean to rearrange the inner architecture of that which is inside of you. This is the way your mind functions, perception, data, processing, thoughts, feelings, emotions, physiological sensations. All of those patterns in the body, we, through yoga, can start to rearrange your inner architecture. We can also work on rearranging the patterns of your nervous system. We can work on rearranging the patterns of your life. How is it that you structure your life so that you feel better more of the time? And we can even help you through the inner rearrangement of your internal architecture, help you interface with the world so that you do less harm to yourself and to others. So this is what we're going to be talking about. And today, the practice of letting go. That's what we're here to talk about. This balance between effort, but also trusting and not having to control everything. So let's go ahead and just kind of get started with the basic three words that you're going to need to know for this episode. And we'll say them again and again, because one of my hopes is that as you listen to the Yoga Therapy Hour this year, that you pick up a few of the Sanskrit words. Personally, I think it's really important for you to know the basics of where these ideas and these words came from. And start to get your mouth around it. Start to practice saying it. I truly believe that when we completely take the tree away from its roots and we no longer use Sanskrit, I personally believe that's a mistake. I think it's a form of cultural appropriation. And it's not that we all have to be Sanskrit experts, but as practitioners and lifelong students of yoga, we can learn a few Sanskrit words. So the words for the day are abhyasa, which means to consistently practice your daily yoga practice, which could be on the mat, could be postures, breathing, meditation, chanting. It could be taking beautiful pictures of things out there in the world. That's a form of yoga practice. It could be so many things. Patanjali doesn't really say we have to do it this way. There's many things we could use as our daily yoga practice, but we have to do it steadily. We have to do it in a committed way. From abhyasa comes vairagyam. The more you do your daily practice, you're more willing to let go of the outcome because you know you've done your best. So it's kind of a form of non-grasping, a form of saying, I've put myself in the position to have this inner rearrangement of my internal architecture. I don't have a lot of control about what's going on out there in the world, but I'm in the best state to respond and to go with the flow of life and do my best. So I'm going to learn to kind of let go and soften some of my control so that I can just basically be a little happier, a little more content, a little less controlling. Now, part of this whole idea of I'm going to practice daily in a steady, consistent way so that I can give up some of the control and some of the outcomes that I want. There comes something called Shraddha, which is an inner trust, an inner confidence, some might say an inner conviction that there is something larger than myself that I can tap into, that I'm not just letting go into the abyss, hoping something happens, but there's a Shraddha, there's a trust in myself that I will know what to do at the right time. That's how usually it starts, is you start to feel like, yeah, I do make good decisions. I can make good decisions. But it also could be Shraddha or trust or conviction in something larger than yourself. You might call that God. You might call that the universe. But it's something larger than your own willpower. Oftentimes we call this Ishvara when you're doing it to something higher than yourself. But for many people, that idea of letting go into something higher than yourself can also be very useful in this process of the reorganization of your inner architecture, that you are doing the best you can with what you have, but you also realize there's a whole lot of things out there in the world that are larger than you that you don't have a lot of control over. So basically, in a nutshell, what we're describing is how do we relate to our own effort on the mat and in life? How do we relate to the outcome of what happens to us, much of which we have no control over? And how do we relate to uncertainty in our lives? Knowing that we've done our best, knowing that we've put ourselves in the best case scenario, regulating our minds, our bodies, our nervous systems, but also knowing that there's no guarantees. And I think for today's day and age, that is so hard to do because there's been so much uncertainty and there's been so many strange, unexpected outcomes. And, you know, I say this today with such a tender, soft heart for all of us that are living by the fingernails. We're just barely holding on because it's terrifying. It's hard. It's chaos. Our loved ones are not okay. So I don't want us to get into this idea, well, if I just do my daily practice, all is well, and I'm going to be fine, and I'm going to let go into the abyss. I'm not saying that. I'm saying let's be human. Let's use our daily practice in a consistent way to support ourselves, to nourish ourselves, to prepare ourselves for those battles out in the world. And let's admit that we don't have control over all of this. So this isn't just like a spiritual bypass or a philosophy. It's actually a lived experience in this human body. And that's what Patanjali's Yoga Sutra is saying from chapter 1 through 4 is like, hey, by the way, you're in a human body. Here's a guidebook for living. We're going to give you some tips about how to make it a little less painful. That's what Patanjali's Yoga Sutra is. So, you know, when we think about how are we going to suffer less as humans, this is the real deal. And it's relevant to nervous system regulation, resiliency, how do we have health behavior change, how do we heal our mental health, and then in kind of a longer arc, how do we grow and change and self-actualize, kind of a personal development flair. So yogic is crossing over nervous system regulation, health behavior change, healing, and personal development, right? It's not pigeonholed into one area, which I think that's one reason it's been hard to market it. And it's also been hard to decide as a field who we are and what we stand for and what we can do in the world, because we have a lot. We have health, healing, and beyond, as TK Vidaskachar says in The Heart of Yoga, health, healing, and beyond. There's a lot in that that we can learn from yoga. So let's talk about, if we start with Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, chapter 1, verse 2. I know we do this week after week, but it's really important. Chapter 1, verse 1 says, now we begin yoga. 1.2 is yogaha Chittavritti Nirodha. Yoga is the process of working with the fluctuations of your mind, because these fluctuations, up and down and up and down, they shape your behavior, your reactions, your emotional patterns, the way you communicate, and your relationships. Like, wow, your mind is the driver of all of that. And so from a modern perspective, if we're looking kind of from a scientific lens, we could say that the fluctuations of your mind are conditioning your neural pathways. They're creating your habitual responses, and they're creating grooves in your nervous system, grooves of activation or collapse. You know, those are two possibilities. So the question really becomes, how do we change these deeply ingrained habitual patterns of the mind, which then end up solidifying in our bodies? And Patanjali gives a really surprisingly simple answer. Patanjali says it's the power of consistent daily practice, sadhana. Now, I know as yoga teachers and yoga therapists, many of us are teaching in the morning, we're teaching in the evening. Because of our need to make a living, we actually sometimes don't have a consistent daily practice. So I'm hoping today will plant a seed in helping you find that time. I remember one of my first teachers had three children. She had to get them off to school in the morning. They were going to get home at 2:30, but I would see her in that yoga studio every single day at 1:30 to 2:15 p.m. That was her time that she did it before she had to go pick up the kids. So it is possible. I know it requires a bit of planning and organizing and support, but it actually is possible to have this consistent practice, that we want to remain steady, that we come back to every day and compare our state and track our states. And sometimes we'd get into our practice, whatever that practice is for you, chanting, meditating, breathing, walking in nature, doing postures. I mean, there's so many things you could do for your daily practice. The idea is not that we have to do it for such a long time or that it has to be super intense. The idea is that it has to be consistent, because it's that North Star that we keep coming back to and bouncing off of and looking at ourselves over time to evaluate the fluctuations of our own mind. Until, I don't know about you, but I get sick of my own mind. Sometimes when I come back to practice 7, 8, 9 days in a row with the same BS, I just feel like, oh my God, Amy, this is a deep groove. This is a pattern. You need to figure this out, because clearly you are suffering. So this consistent practice over time is what really firmly grounds us in observing ourselves. That's really what it boils down to, is are we able to settle down enough to observe ourselves, or at the very least, to not settle down, to observe ourselves and find that painful that, oh, here I am again. I have a good friend, and we laugh because we know that we're not okay when we can't even get ourselves to do any yoga. When the resistance to getting onto the mat for postures or breathing or meditation or getting into the bed for yoga nidra, it's too painful to even try to do it. We know we're not okay. All the more reason to say, okay, we need a restructure here. Things have gotten out of hand. My schedule is too chaotic. I haven't prioritized my health, healing, and beyond, and something has to shift, right? It's kind of a wake-up call when you're unable to do that daily practice. But we want our practice to be firmly grounded over time, preferably many years, without a lot of interruption. I mean, we all have weeks that are a little bit crazy, but for the most part, we want to have that place to come home to day after day without interruption over time. Of course, there will be little interruptions during the actual practice sometimes, but we can deal with that. And I think this one is really important, that we're coming at it with an attitude of care and devotion and sweetness and sacredness, and that it's actually a time we enjoy. It's not a checklist. It's not like, oh, I did it again today. It's like, Oh, I get to go into my inner sanctuary. I get to commune with myself. This is the sweetness that I deserve for me, and that there's actually a positive association with that. Oh, we call it an ashraya, that you have this deep, deep longing to come back home to yourself and to not be interrupted and to really feel yourself again. You know, so many people believe that transformation comes from out there. Oh, I was inspired by this person. I was motivated by this person. This thing happened that made me have this realization. But yoga philosophy suggests something different, that instead of some big thing out there, that we transform and reorganize this inner landscape with small, tiny practices repeated steadily over many, many, many years. A breathing practice you do regularly, a meditation practice you do regularly, observing your own thoughts as the witness or the observer, choosing new behaviors, even though it's uncomfortable, and observing yourself feeling and sensing, oh, I don't have my familiar, I don't have my normal, but I'm choosing this new way of being. Practicing things like kindness, right? There's many, many ways to have these small, steady practices over time. And this is why I have a little bit of a problem with someone saying, oh, I'm going to give you a nervous system hack, or I'm going to give you that long exhale breathing technique to relax you and get your vagus nerve online. Okay, better than nothing. It's a start, it's an introduction. But really, if we're going to do practices over time, we need all the tools of yoga. We need to know how to do some chanting and some breathing and some meditating and some postures, because different days are going to require different practices, right? So I really think the beauty of yoga comes in the total lifestyle overhaul. It comes in the matrix of tools that we can choose from, not just a one-off experience. And again, we all have to enter somewhere. There's a door to enter in. But as yoga therapists, especially, I think we're really trying to get people to commit to this kind of long-term period of self-observation, self-reflection, self-awareness, and maybe one day self-actualization. That's where we want people to head. I've told people this before, that my private practice, most of the people that I've been working with, I've been with them for 10 years or longer. And we meet one time per month because they know that they're going to have something to work with that month. They're going to get a practice different for every person that is going to help them on this journey of health, healing, and beyond, or self-awareness, self-reflection, and self-actualization. So that's really the goal, is to help people become the observer over time and to kind of watch the fluctuations of their mind, their body, and their nervous system over time. And so, from kind of a neuroscience perspective, we're reprogramming the neural pathways, or at the very least, we're watching what's wiring and firing together and how uncomfortable that is. And, you know, honoring that there is a way to change those things, that we are not a victim of our physiology, our nervous system, the thoughts, the feelings, the emotions. We're not a victim to that. We actually have quite a bit of control over that if we decide to do a daily practice. So I'll tell you one of my secrets. I love to lift weights. I just like the feeling. It brings my vata down. It just makes me feel more stable. I think I can be a little bit hypermobile. So I'll do Pilates reformer, I'll do hand weights, I'll go to the gym and do the weight machines, but almost every day there's going to be some weights involved. But whenever I lift weights, I do it very slowly with a lot of interoceptive awareness. I pay attention to my breath as well as the contraction, both the shortening and the lengthening of the muscles. I try to feel things inside my joints. I'm doing it very slowly, very mindfully. It is awesome. It feels so good. And on my headphones, or if I'm at home, I just have it on the stereo. Our positive affirmations reprogramming my mind that likes to go negative on me. I just put those positive affirmations on and we listen to them all day long. Sometimes it's my own voice, like the ones I have on the Optimal State mobile app, where it's kind of a top-down processing and brainwashing. Other times I'll listen to other authors of affirmations, but what I'm trying to do with this is strengthen the body-mind connection, the neural pathways of working out in a mindful way, building interoceptive awareness, as well as positive thoughts, feelings, and emotions. And I am telling you, I feel like $1 million when I get done with that. I try to do it about an hour a day. It's a very, very powerful rebuilding. And you may not think that that sounds like yoga, but to me, that is yoga. I know a lot of women, especially my age in their mid-50s, who have gotten kind of this hypermobility, and to do only postures with no weight training is not working for us anymore. So just to offer that as an example of how we can rebuild the inner architecture of our beings in very, very creative ways. Let's take just a little pause here to talk about our Ayurveda practitioner certificate at Notre Dame of Maryland School of Integrative Health. This Ayurvedic certificate program is 4 classes, it's 12 credits. It is an accredited university with federal financial aid available. We also accept the GI Bill. We would love for you to come on over and get a little bit of Ayurvedic expertise, especially if you're already a yoga teacher or a yoga therapist. If you'd like more information about our Ayurvedic certificate program, we do have open houses at Notre Dame of Maryland once a month, or you can email me and I can send you all the information. We hope you'll consider joining us for the Ayurvedic certificate program. All right, let's get back to the episode. All right, so let's go back to this idea of vairagya, which is what TKV Deskachar would say is if you do your daily practice, if you do the abhyasa, the vairagyam is an outcome. You don't have to be like, I'm letting go now. I'm learning to surrender. I'm going to allow the universe to guide me. What TKV Deskachar would say is that the softening, or you might call it the letting go of the resistance, the need for control, the need to know the outcome, that kind of just happens when you do your daily practice consistently, that you don't have to try to let go. And if you actually are trying, that creates a whole nother amount of complexity and control. So let's just think of you do your daily practice, abhyasa, and eventually vairagyam happens. And if it's not happening, I would say go to a yoga therapist and get personalized practices for you to see if you can get the process to work. Of course, you'd want to go to a skilled yoga therapist, which I'm more than happy to recommend for you if you're not sure where to turn. I have a lot of people that I know that I would trust with my own child if I had one. So, finding a person who understands Patanjali's Yoga Sutras and these concepts of consistent practice lead to a letting go or a surrender, and eventually into your trust in yourself and your faith in maybe something higher than yourself. That's kind of a process that we go through as part of our practice. It's not just about stretching your quadratus lumborum. It's not just about three-part breath. There's actually an end game here. That's what I want us to know. And not every client is ready for that end game, which is to do your best in life and then surrender the outcome and hope it all works out and get comfortable with that gray area. Not everybody's going to be there, but you're a yoga teacher, you're a yoga therapist. You need to start working in that direction if we're truly, truly practicing our yoga. So, just my opinion. Opinions are a dime a dozen. You don't have to agree with me. It's okay. But what I would love for us to work towards is the teachings of Patanjali, which means I'm going to cling to the outcomes less. I'm not going to become so entangled in my own biases and agendas and desires. I'm not going to define the end game of my life as I have to have this to be successful, or I'm failing at that, or I'm the good guy and you're the bad guy. You know, all that stuff. I do agree that we should not sit back and watch harm occur. If we can do something to support other humans and step in at an appropriate time because we're the right person to step in and do something and make sure they're not harmed. Absolutely. I mean, I think about all the friends and neighbors here in Minnesota that were willing to step forward and inconvenience themselves, harm themselves, sometimes die. You know, so many people giving groceries, delivering groceries during the time here in Minnesota when the ICE raids were happening. It's not that we're going to like sit back and not do those things. We are going to do those things. And at the same time that we're doing all of that, we don't know what the outcome is going to be. We don't get to have it our way all the time. We don't get to decide what the final outcome is going to be. As we do our daily practice, we just start to realize, oh, there's just so much more bigger than me that's happening. And I'm doing my little part, but I also know that it's going to be what it's going to be. It's not an excuse not to act. Let's be very clear about that, because in the Bhagavad Gita, it says you must act from where you are, who you are, within your dharma. You must act. It's not okay to sit back and not do anything. You have to do it. That's why Arjuna had to go fight, right? And Arjuna also had to admit to himself that it might not turn out the way that he and his brothers and their families wanted it to turn out. But it's not a reason not to act. So what we're setting up here is, how can we have this consistency in our life, this daily practice, coming home to self without a lot of striving and tension internally about it has to be this way, and I have to do it at 6 a.m. and it has to be an hour and a half, and then I have to look a certain way and I have to wear a certain thing and the outcome has to be this number on the scale. Right? We're not talking about practice like that. We're talking about a practice where we're coming home to self and softening and becoming more receptive and observing the fluctuations of our mind and our nervous system. So this idea of daily practice, it's not passive, but it's not striving. It's doing it because it feels good and we want to do it. And we're just going to see what happens. We're just going to see what happens. And from that place, it's a little easier to let the outcome be what it's going to be, the vairagyam, the surrender, the letting go. Not because you cognitively said, I need to let go, but just in that softening and receptivity and allowing without your timeline and your agenda and your hurt feelings, it just happens that you soften and you kind of realize, okay, the world doesn't revolve around me. I don't get my way all the time. Universe, why are you doing this? Or God, I'm so upset. But you know that you're part of this larger picture in the flow of life, and you begin to expect that life is going to unfold with you as part of it. And sometimes it's going to be pleasant, and sometimes it's going to be unpleasant. So we're doing our best not to grasp for results or outcomes, but rather to allow ourselves to be with how we are and to observe ourselves being in this moment. And then we can notice when we start to observe ourselves in our daily practice, we can notice, ah, oh, I'm very sympathetically activated today, or my mind is very cloudy today, or wow, I'm having weird anxiety today. What's this about? Or oh my gosh, I have to give that talk and I'm so scared I'm going to look like an idiot. Or plotting and planning, and how am I going to over control this birthday party today? Right? So it's through the daily practice and then the softening, the vairagyam, that we create a little bit of psychological flexibility. But also, I would even say from that comes physiological flexibility, meaning the felt sense or the sensations that you feel in your body can soften and go with the flow a little bit, instead of muscle tension being so taut, instead of, you know, contraction of the chest, instead of high blood pressure, skin temperature going up, you know, all the things that happen when we're really activated. And, you know, just kind of allowing that psychological and physiological flexibility to happen. All right, so now we've got the daily consistent practice as often as possible. We have softened into the reality of we don't control everything. We're doing our best, whatever, it's going to happen. And then from that, this quiet force within starts to emerge. And that's what we call Shraddha, Yoga Sutra 120, that it's from this inner trust or conviction that we start to have more courage, that we can speak our truth because it's right action, that we can remember who we really are and why we're here and what is your purpose. What is your right action? You don't have to jump on everything. You don't have to be the mouthpiece for everything, but you have to decide, when am I needed? Is this for me to talk about? Is this within my dharma, my purpose? So it's from this inner conviction, this inner courage, that we start to have realizations about who am I, why am I here, what is right action for me. And again, that goes back to the Bhagavad Gita and Arjuna. Those are all the questions Arjuna was asking Krishna for the 18 chapters is, oh, this is who I am. I seem to have forgotten. I need a reminder of who I am, why I'm here, and what I've committed to do in this lifetime, and what is right action. So we start to have deep insight. Some people might call it intuition, but at the very least, we have deep insight into why am I here? What is right action for me? And so Shraddha, even though it's often translated as faith, I think in this yoga therapeutic context, it's better understood as I can trust myself to know what to do at the right time. I can get more comfortable with the unfolding. I can trust the process of life. I don't have to have everything right here, up front and center, just the way I like it at this very time. I can give a little time and spaciousness. I can trust the possibility of change. Even though I don't think I like it and I feel a little contracted, I can soften into it and be like, well, what if the change ends up being better than I ever imagined? And I can trust that the practice matters, that coming home to self day after day after day makes a difference. It's a quiet inner growth experience. As we said, a reorganization of your deeply internal sense of self and the architecture of what makes you who you are. Now, something that I find so amazing about this circle of daily practice, softening, now I have more inner trust, more inner conviction, is it keeps reinforcing itself. The more I practice, the more softening that happens, the more trust I build. And now I don't abandon my practice as often because I am jonesing or longing for that cycle to continue. Or even when I think, oh, the progress is so slow, I'm not getting anywhere. I've been dealing with this same mental habitual anxiety for 3 years now. I'm so tired of it. That Shraddha has that quiet voice within to say, it's fine. There's no timeline. You're doing great. Hang in there, right? And so as the Shraddha grows, it reinforces the practice, the softening again and again. And so we see that people start to have more hope. They start to have more openness to something new, more willingness to allow the universe to rearrange the outer experience because the inner architecture is changing. So it was only natural that the outer experiences will also change. Being open to learning and growing, right? That this is actually fun. It's part of the process of being a human in this lifetime. So we start to have this openness and this excitement about what comes next. And, I feel a little guilty saying this because I cannot tell you how many decades of my life I lived basically in poverty. And there was no hope. There was no willingness. There was no openness. And actually, I have a lot of swear words that can come back quite easily when I think of these things. Like, I just feel like, yeah, screw you. You don't know what it's like to not have your basic needs met. I want you to know that I do know that feeling. I still know that feeling sometimes. And even on those days when I don't see enough money in the bank to pay the bill that's due, and yes, it still happens. My husband and I are yoga teachers. Even on those days, I still think it's better to work towards a little more openness, towards a little more hope, towards a little more willingness. Because the alternative is collapse and shutdown and constriction. And I don't feel very good when I do those things. So it may just be an intention or a little hopeful prayer that, please, universe, I'm doing my best to do my practice. Please support me in this work. Something to just let the universe know that I'm willing to allow this reorganization to happen. I'm trying my best not to resist it, even though I want to clamp down and it's painful. Just continuously coming back and then watching the tightening happening, the dukkha, and okay, we're going to soften it again, honey. It's all right. It's going to be okay. Like observing that contraction and relaxing, right? That's all part of the daily practice. It's not like daily practice always feels good. Sometimes daily practice feels really crappy because we are realizing how much we're hurting and how much contraction there is. So, I guess what I'm asking you with respect to Shraddha is just be open to the possibility that something could shift. I'll give you an example. Earlier today, one of my employers, a very small amount of my employment, thankfully, basically is saying, I don't know how much work we're going to be able to give you. This economy is getting pretty tight. And, I just need you to be aware that things might be contracting a bit financially. And of course, my first thought was, oh no, I'm depending on that amount of sustenance every month. Like, that's an important part of our income. And, I have this sinking in my heart. My blood pressure goes up a little bit. I start to feel a little dizzy and hot. My physiology changes. My thoughts start going back to, oh my gosh, there's not going to be enough. And, oh goodness, why did I put my eggs in this basket? I should have been doing that basket. And, blaming and shaming, and the whole thing can get going. But the daily practice can say, no, let's take a pause. Let's focus on interoceptive awareness, slowly contracting when the weight comes towards you, slowly releasing as the weight moves away from you, pleasant sensations in your body. Be here now in your body in this present moment. Breathe, feel how it feels to inhale and expand your chest. And how does it feel to bend over and stretch your low back? And oh my gosh, there's some positive affirmations being played. Okay, I don't really like them. They're kind of making me mad today, but I'm going to listen anyway. Maybe a few of those can go in the back door and help me not be so contracted. I swear, after an hour of that, it's almost impossible to stay that contracted. There is a softening, there is a loosening that happens. It may not be perfect. I may need to do it again 12 hours later because the contraction has come back. But the commitment is to doing it over and over and over, whatever that practice looks like for you. So I want you to think of these aspects of abhyasa, daily practice, vairagyam, a softening, allowing, and shraddha, this inner conviction or faith, as the triangle of transformation that you show up in practice, you release the outcomes, and you start to trust the process. That's it. That's it. I mean, I know it sounds so easy, and yet it's so hard, is it not? So, if we don't have them, we start pushing too hard. We are in much more contracted state. Life is unpleasant. Our mind goes dark. The people we talk to hear us complain. They hear our trauma. They're actually not as likely to want to connect with us because they've got a lot on their plate and it's really hard. We don't get that co-regulation. We become discouraged. We may even abandon the path of yoga altogether. That's what we don't want to happen. But what we really want to happen is that we have these simple daily routines. We have these consistent practices. We have these nervous system regulation strategies. We have these positive affirmations, which are going to allow us to soften the perfectionism, let go of the rigidity of our expectations. Oh, that's a big one. And release the identity, basically, that we have for ourselves. The identity, release and soften these outfits that we've tried on, that we come to believe this is who I am. We start to actually take those outfits off and let them go and realize I'm not any of those things. I'm something beyond all of that. And through that process, I promise you, the Shraddha will build, the confidence will build. You will start to trust the process. You will be more patient. You will not need it done in your timeline according to your willpower. And you'll see it unfold gradually. And this is how yoga therapy becomes a lifestyle, a way of perceiving your life rather than a technique. And I think that is something we all need to lean into. We're a little bit worried that LHCP, licensed healthcare providers, are going to steal all of our techniques and our tools, and they're going to get all the work. And honestly, if healthcare wants someone to provide a few tools and techniques, it probably is true. So I really think we have to lean into this long-term lifestyle transformation, inner reorganization, self-awareness, self-reflection, self-regulation, and self-actualization. We may actually, as a field, have to rethink our entire dharma as a field. I've been thinking about this a lot lately, this idea of moving into healthcare and do we get licensed and what do we give up? And who are we? I mean, I don't know if I should say this out loud, but I feel like the parsing off of all of our tools and technologies has already happened. All the tools have been taken out of the toolbox and people have them and everybody's doing them. We're not going to be able to pull that back. We're not going to be able to give me back that long exhale breathing and give me back that imagery and give me back the yoga nidra. They're out there. But what has not been lost, which I believe we need to lean into, is the type of thing we're talking about today. And in fact, this entire season 10 with the eight limbs of yoga, the holistic nature of bringing it all together. And I think as a field, we have to find the words for that. How are we going to articulate that? How are we going to have that show up in our marketing? And then how are we going to do that, both practicing it for ourselves, and then from that organic inner experience and reorganization, teaching others how to do that. Anyway, those are my thoughts today. Some closing reflections. You know, yoga does not promise instant change. It's a lot of tiny, tiny behaviors done slightly differently over time. It's built on a long-term path of practice and letting go and building trust. And just kind of steadily moving through the process and releasing our grip and our grasp for outcomes and continuously maintaining the trust in the process. And then eventually the mind and the nervous system become more flexible, more stable, more clear. So that's kind of the quiet work of yoga. And that's the work that I hope we continue to do with one another, within ourselves and for each other as we continue onward. Thank you, everyone, for listening today and contemplating these thoughts with me. All of these ideas and opinions are constantly in flux and change. So what we say today may not be what we think next year. But for today, those are the things that we can think about. Thank you, everyone. Have a great week. We'll talk soon. Thank you for being a listener of the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. We have done over 200 episodes, and we have had over 200,000 downloads. And we hope that in some small way, we have supported you mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. If you'd like to support the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast in 2026, there's several meaningful ways you can do so. First, you can become a member of our Patreon community and donate as little as $5 a month to keep the podcast going. Your contribution helps us to sustain the depth and quality of conversations on the podcast. A second option is that you become an Optimal State mobile app member for both Android and iPhone. Again, this is about $5 a month, and we're going to start providing a lot of amazing content on our mobile app in 2026. We'll definitely want you to be part of that community. We also have a book coming out called Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health. This book will be published by Routledge Publisher in spring 2026. It's written by Amy Wheeler and Marlisa Sullivan. We hope you'll consider purchasing this book when it comes out in the spring of 2026. Again, the name is Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health by Wheeler and Sullivan. For those of you who are seeking advanced training in therapeutic yoga or in yoga therapy, please consider checking out the programs at Notre Dame of Maryland School of Integrative Health. We have a MS in yoga therapy, and we also have a post-master's degree therapeutic yoga for licensed healthcare providers that's starting in the fall of 2026. In addition, we have a comprehensive Ayurveda certificate program also geared towards licensed healthcare providers. Each one of these programs is a pathway designed to support healthcare professionals and yoga teachers and yoga therapists who are ready to integrate these teachings into clinical, education, and community settings. All right, thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.